Welcome to the Experienced Arden Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with Rachel Gibson. Rachel is a second-year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021, and she is also the CEO of Darden Capital Management. Rachel and I recently connected via Zoom to talk a bit more about her background, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, as well as her role with Darden Capital Management. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is my interview with Rachel Gibson. Rachel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's nice to have you here. First and foremost, how are you doing? How are things going?
I'm great. We have finals coming up this week. So Q1 is coming to a close, which is crazy because I feel like time moves very fast at Darden, which is a good thing, but also a sad thing because I can't believe I'm almost done with my first quarter of my second year, which is crazy.
I know. I think they keep everybody so busy. Then you look up and gosh, it's time for graduation. I know it's got to be a little bit more bittersweet here as you're in your second and final year here at Darden. One of the questions we've been getting from prospective students a lot is about, you know, COVID and how the school is navigating everything. Curious if you have any thoughts or insights to share about what your learning experience has been like here in quarter one. How are things going?
Definitely. Things are going well. I will say that I've been incredibly impressed with how Darden has managed through this time and the technology and the infrastructure and everything that's been put in place for COVID times so that we can have class and somewhat of a normal experience has been great. I have a lot of hybrid classes and I've felt like the learning experience has been almost the same. Of course, it's different to not physically be in class with everybody, but I feel like I'm still getting what I wanted out of my Darden education. And the professors here are so phenomenal. It just really makes it easy to feel like you're still in class, even though I'm on a screen sometimes. So I've been very impressed and it's been difficult to not have certain events that we, you know, look forward to in the fall, but we're hoping for a more normal spring and hopefully we can have some more events at that time when things are a little bit different.
Yeah, it's difficult to convene large groups of students or large groups of people right now. And of course, the number in terms of group size continues to change and evolve as the university's health and safety guidelines continue to evolve. But you did mention the hybrid class experience, and some of our listeners may not know a bunch about that, but it's a new class format for us here at the Darden School. It is a format where some students are participating in person and some students are participating virtually in the same class session. And that format was really born out of the fact that our classroom capacity went to around 20 students because of the health and safety guidelines the university put in place with 6 feet of social distancing. And so quick question for you about what classes you're taking this quarter. I know it's put you on the spot a little bit, see if you can remember, but what are you taking right now?
So I have we'll talk about Darden Capital Management later, but I have a strong interest in investment management and finance. So I've been focusing a lot of my second year courses on that topic. So I'm in a derivatives and options class. I'm in applied securities analysis, which is kind of a funny title, but it's really just valuations of companies and different forms of valuation. So we have a lot of guest speakers from funds around the Charlottesville area and alumni and friends of the university that come and speak about managing money. So it's been a great way to integrate what I'm learning, you know, through the case method and then bringing in a speaker that maybe helped write the case or the case was about. And so it's been great to still have that experience. Even in the hybrid version, everything's been great. I'm in a few other, let's see, I am also on the student admissions committee. So I get credit for interviewing first year or prospective students. I'm a second year coach, so I get credit for helping first years through their recruiting process, and we have class for that. And then there's a class that I'm taking called Leadership Learning Lab, where club presidents are able to take this course about leading teams, and we meet once a week to kind of touch base on what's happening at Darden and do cases on managing people. And it's been a really great experience to be in a class with other leaders at the university.
No wonder that it feels like a busy quarter for you. That's a very full plate. And you know, for our students listening, the thing that I always highlight, and we had Miranda Guerrero on here, who was also and equally involved doing a lot of things, and students play such an active role in shaping life at the Darden School. The thing that I always talk about with respect to students is the second year coach, and this way that second year students help out first year students, because I think of it as such a great example of what Darden is about. I mean, student admissions committee, you could say the same, right? Second year students helping sort of figure out the next class of, you know, of students coming into the Darden School and being engaged in that way and sharing of their time and their experience. But what drew you to be a second year coach?
Great question. I love being a second year coach. I feel like when I was applying to schools and thinking about the type of community I wanted to be a part of, I wanted to prioritize a place where this pay it forward mentality was strong. So to know that the second years were invested in the success of the first year's recruiting process and helping educate them on, you know, best ways to go about certain things, I thought was phenomenal. I had great mentors throughout the class above me that weren't even necessarily my second year coach, but you know, saw me in the library and, or saw me at, you know, info sessions and said, hey, do you want to grab coffee? I'd love to help, you know, guide you through this process. And because I developed those relationships and mentors sort of organically, I wanted to make sure that because people above me took the time to do that for me, I wanted to pay it forward and do that for the class below me. So I've really enjoyed it so far. I have 7 first years that are my, we call them coachees, but I'm helping them. And I think they've actually created a great community within that group as well, because they're all recruiting investment management. So it's been great to see sort of subgroups form out of recruiting. And I will say some of my best friends here at Darden are people that I met through the recruiting process, and, you know, going through that together brought us together. But being a second year coach is great. I was on the phone with one of them this morning discussing resume, you know, things and plans to reach out to alums. And I think these will be relationships that I'll have forever. And I'm happy that Darden gave me the opportunity to be involved in that.
Well, I appreciate your sharing that experience. I know it was not in the previous shared questions in advance of this conversation, but it's such a great thing that students do. And I do, again, think it's so emblematic of the culture here. So I appreciate you taking a little bit of time. So before we get into Darden Capital Management, because as you noted, that's why we invited you here to talk about your role as CEO. But before we get there, let's talk about you and what you did prior to business school, and then what led you to Darden. So tell us a little bit more about your background.
For sure. So I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and I have always had an interest in the markets and investing. I ended up going to a boarding school to finish off my high school career, and then went to Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. I was an accounting and financial management major there. So again, I've always had this sort of inclination towards investing. And then when I was looking at full-time roles, I wanted to be at a place where the community was valued, and sort of that collaboration, the learning environment was still there. So I considered lots of different roles in finance, but ultimately ended up at Cambridge Associates in Boston, which is a investment management consulting firm, which I absolutely loved working there. It was an amazing experience. So I was there for 4 years after undergrad, working with pension fund clients. So Cambridge Associates works with institutional investors, so endowments, foundations, pensions, sovereign wealth funds, private families, and a lot of the relationships are advisory. So they help advise those groups on how to invest their money. And then most of my clients were discretionary, so they gave us discretion to invest their money how we, you know, saw fit. So we had clients ranging from $150 million to $4.2 billion. And then we would invest across all asset classes. So from, you know, US long only equity funds to hedge funds, private equity, private real assets, fixed income, all of the above. So I had great exposure to the entire sort of investment universe of different ways to invest money, and at a very high level learned about every asset class under the sun. And I had an amazing team, loved the people that I worked with, learned a ton on both the quantitative and qualitative side, and ultimately had some advice from mentors and my bosses about being a woman in the finance industry, and they said that it made sense for me to consider getting a CFA or going back to school and getting my MBA if I did want to continue on in the industry. And since both of my mentors and advisors did go to business school, it was easy for me to look at that as an option. And that's sort of where the idea of going back to school came from. So I did a long process of struggled with test scores and did a lot of work to get myself ready for the application process, and eventually applied and I'm very happy to have ended up at Darton. Darton was a top choice of mine from the beginning, and I'm feel very happy to be here.
I'm curious what appealed to you about Darton. Bucknell is a smaller mm-hmm. school. Sometimes I think that Darton, because it is a smaller community and people are so involved in and out of class and the classes are so interactive, maybe it has some resonance for people who know that sort of smaller liberal arts environment. But I don't want to step on your answer and speak for you. So what about Darton appealed to you?
Great question. I think when I was considering getting my MBA, I was very aware of not wanting it to be a situation where I was just checking a box. I didn't want it to be, you know, I'm going to get this degree so that I can continue on, but I wanted to be somewhere where those 2 years away from work were going to be time that I was investing in myself and my future, and being in an environment where I was immersed in the community and had the ability to really be involved and of course, you know, learn a lot of different things. But I didn't want to go to a school where, for example, maybe students, you know, in a larger city, maybe they left on the weekends or weren't a part of the community all the time. So as you mentioned, Bucknell was very similar, where we were in a small town in Pennsylvania. So Charlottesville is definitely not Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, but at the same time, I was drawn to this community in the sense that I wanted to be an active member of the community, and I wanted to be surrounded by people that also wanted to be active members of the community. I think that Darton is a school where people self-select to be here. So many people have that same mindset of, I want to be at a school where I'm very much a part of the school and I'm not just checking a box. So that aspect was important to me. And then the case method was, excuse me, incredibly interesting, because I knew that one of my weaknesses at work was my ability to come across as confident in meetings and being able to speak up and being able to articulate my thoughts when I had an opinion. And I knew that the case method would push me to become this confident communicator that I've always wanted to be. And so when I came to Darton for a day where we, you know, went through a mock case, and that day completely changed my mindset about what I wanted out of my classroom experience, because I could feel myself already, you know, changing and molding into, you know, feeling nervous when I was getting cold called and, you know, wondering what the people around me were thinking. But it was very clear that the case method was the only way that I was going to be formed into the leader that I've always wanted to be. So very quickly, I knew that going to Darton on top of everything else with the case method was going to be best for my long-term, you know, career goals and to be honest, personal goals of just how I think through things. I wanted to be a part of a situation where the classroom experience was invigorating and people were, you know, paying attention and active. And I can say after first year core, that's very much the case. And everybody comes to class very prepared and every conversation is interesting. And I miss it. First year core was a lot of work, but it was a really great experience, and I'm excited for those that get to do it soon.
And as you mentioned, Darton has a core curriculum. In the second year, there are certainly opportunities to specialize and kind of focus on a particular area or two, whatever might align with your professional or personal interests. Did the fact that you were going to have to take this sort of broad core appeal to you at all? The fact that you were going to take all these classes together? I'm curious, because for people that want to kind of go that finance or investment route, there is, you know, you could just, you know, do a heavy dose of finance or kind of mm-hmm. skew in that direction. Darton is general management, as you noted. And I'm wondering how you thought through that.
No, that's a great point. And coming from an accounting and finance major background, I definitely considered that in terms of, okay, I've taken classes in this realm before. Is that necessary? And I think what's really interesting about the case method in the Darden core is that, yes, I took finance and accounting and marketing and ops and decision analysis, but the way that those courses are taught via the case method and the way that the professors manage the classroom, I can very confidently say that I was not learning the same material that I was learning the same material as I was learning in undergrad, but it was a very different conversation. So instead of walking through, you know, here are the three financial statements, this is how they work, that work is sort of done before class with your learning team and on your own in some ways. And then the conversation in class is about, okay, here's the decision, here are the inputs, who's affected by the decision, what are the repercussions, and what are you going to do as the manager in the decision? So yes, you know, in the accounting classes, we went over those things, but it wasn't the base of what the conversation was about. And I think that that depth and sort of next level layer of conversation is exactly what I wanted out of my MBA experience. And I don't think that that conversation necessarily would happen without the case method, but in the same sense, back to your question, I thought about it, but had heard from peers and friends of mine that had gone to Darden that the content of those classes was very different. And I actually feel way more prepared to be able to make these decisions and be confident in my background with the content that I learned because of the case method and because of the professors here. So it was never a situation where I felt like I was sort of going over the same stuff I learned in undergrad. And I've heard from other peers that they felt the same way. And I also will say that most of what was interesting in terms of the makeup of the classroom, because people come from such diverse backgrounds, was when somebody from maybe a non-traditional background asked a question in accounting or finance that to them maybe seemed, you know, oh, I'm sorry to slow down the conversation, but, you know, what does this mean or how is this integrated into that? And they would move the conversation into a way that made everyone else think, like I learned that in a textbook years ago, but I never thought of it in that way. Or what does that really mean? Or how would I explain that to a colleague that doesn't understand? And those skills are incredibly important in the business world. And I'm very thankful that the classroom conversation revolved around that. So I hope that answered your question.
No, definitely. And I appreciate your making those points, because I think sometimes people who have that accounting background or finance background, they look at the core and they say, well, I've taken some of these classes already. Can I just place out? And of course, for those folks listening to the podcast who are just learning about Darden, no one places out of classes here at Darden. You go through the core just like everybody else, and you may have things to teach your classmates. And as you know, Rachel, your classmates may have some things to teach you, even in for sure. Subjects where you think that you know a lot already. You made such a good point about this not being the exact same conversation you've had previously, that case method combined with the fact that this is a graduate level business school and the mix of people in the room and the work experience that's there. There's so many reasons as to why it's different. But you explained it much better than I ever could. So,
I think the only other thing I'll add is I think sometimes, like you said, if you feel like you're an expert in something, for example, I remember in a finance class, we were discussing correlation and beta and different metrics that I've used every single day at work. And then when it came time to someone, or, you know, someone asking the question, what do these things mean? And I had to explain it to someone that hadn't necessarily been working with it before. It was very difficult. And it taught me how to reframe and reshape how to explain those things and how to articulate it in a way that I will have to explain to a client in the future. And that resonates. And I think, even though you might think you're an expert in something and you are content-wise, having to verbalize it and articulate it in a way that makes sense to others is, as I said, a skill that I think you only get from being forced to have those conversations. So very thankful for the Darden case method.
I was struck by your self-awareness as you were going through the application process or just thinking about schools. It sounds like you came to Darden for very real reasons with a real intentionality around your professional development. I'm wondering, though, about what that first year and what the adjustment was like to you. It sounds like, you know, you came because you wanted to stretch and you wanted to grow. What was your first year like?
Great question. First year was incredible. I feel like there were many times, like we said at the beginning, where I picked my head up and said, wow, I can't believe, you know, it's November already, or, you know, time moves fast. But first year was rewarding. It was incredibly challenging. I felt like I had been, you know, very busy in the past and had a lot of things that I was juggling, but first year at Darden is a whole different experience in terms of, you know, thinking through priorities and things that are important to you. And when it comes to recruiting versus class versus social things versus self-care and all of those layers that I definitely, you know, thought about when I was working full time, but I think because every minute here is so precious with how you're spending it, I tell friends and family and prospective students this all the time, but after first year core at Darden, I feel like I can handle anything that's thrown at me in terms of, you know, a project that comes up last minute or a request from a client or learning how to prioritize social things. It feels like it's a bit of a machine where you go in it and you're not really sure what you're about to enter into, but you come out of it incredibly prepared to handle life. And I think that's, as you said, something that I was looking forward to going through when I was getting my MBA, but I'm happy to report that I feel very thankful and know that first year was challenging, but it made me who I am today, and I wouldn't take any of it back.
I think we oftentimes hear from people when they reflect on the application process and they say, oh, that was a really great, you know, experience. I had the opportunity to reflect and really think about myself. It tends to be more after they've gotten in and matriculated that maybe when you're going through it, you may not always have that clarity. But one of the things people have said here on the podcast is oftentimes they start to feel the real value of the first year, even during that summer internship, mm-hmm. where they realize all of a sudden, you know, they're able to have a perspective, or the way that they're, you know, their approach to work, or, you know, what other people may feel like is a lot, really maybe not as much because of the rigor of the experience they just had. I'm wondering, I know it was a different summer for many people than what they had imagined, you know, maybe a virtual summer, maybe you were in Charlottesville, maybe you were somewhere else, but I'm curious about how your summer went and what'd you do?
Yes. So I was virtual this summer. I was working for JP Morgan Private Bank as I was rotating through a couple different roles, but that was supposed to be in New York and I was in Charlottesville, which was fine. It was actually nice. There were quite a few of us here this summer working remotely. So we had the opportunity to, you know, go play tennis and go do things in Charlottesville that we may not have been able to do had we been, you know, not virtual. So I'm aware that there was a silver lining to being virtual, but my internship was fantastic. There were quite a few Darden alums at JP Morgan at the private bank that helped me through the recruiting process. So being able to work with them this summer was incredibly rewarding. And so I did end up getting a full-time offer, which is exciting. So I'm going to be joining JP Morgan's private bank in their financial institutions group as an investor. So I was working with ultra high net worth families, net worth of 25 million plus, investing their money and helping them manage, you know, wealth and estate planning and thinking about different elements of taxes and all of the planning that goes into wealth advising. So it was a really great experience, and I loved the people that I worked with, and I'm excited to join the team next summer in New York. But one thing that you said that I wanted to touch on in terms of how did the first year prepare me, first year core, first year at Darden prepare me for my summer, I think there were quite a few times this summer where I thought, wow, there's no way I could have managed, you know, getting through that if it hadn't been for core. So for example, every week the summer associates were expected to do a role play. So you had to pitch an investment topic to 7 or 8 different managing directors, and we had to pretend to be the JP Morgan representative, and then the MDs were the client. And of course it was over Zoom, but it was very much a, you know, role play situation where they were pushing us and asking us tough questions, and we were forced to kind of be uncomfortable because that's what we might have to do, you know, in the full-time role. And I was for sure challenged by it, but I also felt like being cold called throughout the year at Darden and being put on my, or asked to, you know, answer questions that I didn't necessarily prepare for, that mental state was much better than it would have been had I not been at Darden because of that. There was also a time where I was in a meeting with like probably 50 plus people, and the head of the entire group had called on me because he knew I was in a meeting listening to a call prior to this meeting. And he said, Rachel Gibson, I know you were on the call. Can you walk us through, you know, what happened? And I got cold called in a meeting in front of a lot of really important people. And again, that experience is real and happens in the workplace all the time. And being cold called at Darden, which happened to me quite a lot, prepared me for those moments. And I think that I handled it, again, better than I would have had I not been at Darden. So I'm very thankful for all those uncomfortable moments during core when I was cold called, and in the moment felt like, oh my gosh, am I doing this right? But looking back, I am very thankful that all of that happened.
And for those of you who are wondering a bit about what a cold call is, it's when you get called on and you have not raised your hand. You have not volunteered in any way. You're just sitting there and the faculty member says, hey, Rachel, what do you think about this? And so,
Welcome to the case.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens here at Darden. It is something that you can be prepared for, but yet you still can't fully be prepared for it. Heart palpitations, probably a little bit of nerves as well.
For sure.
I think most people will tell you they remember the first time they were cold called, or at least that's been a common memory as I've talked with people here on the podcast. So, but you know, it does help people develop. It is a real thing. It will happen in the working world. So Rachel, as I mentioned at the outset here, we invited you on because you are the CEO of Darden Capital Management. And reflecting back on our many episodes, I mean, we're 70 plus episodes in now. We had not talked about Darden Capital Management. And I felt like, gosh, it's time that we actually talked about this. So before we talk about your role and the sort of history that you're making in your role, tell us about what Darden Capital Management is.
Yes. So Darden Capital Management is technically a second year course where 24 students are chosen. You apply and you're chosen to manage. Right now, the amount is $22 million of UVA's endowment. So there's a slice of that money that was set aside in the early 90s. And the program's been in place since 1991. But basically, we have complete jurisdiction over the money. And it's real money. And we have five different funds that have different investment theses, but a lot of it's bottom-up stock picking, and we do stock pitches and then implement those into the portfolios, and we are the ones actively trading it and managing it. So it's a real hands-on experience, where learning experience, where, you know, it's not a simulation, but this is real money that is hopefully invested for the long term for the endowment. And it's our way of not only learning about investing and stock picking and portfolio construction and asset allocation and all of those things that come along with investment management, but it's also in some ways giving back to the school because we are managing that money and hopefully growing it for future Darden classes. But that's the high level overview. That Darden Capital Management also serves as a club. So in some ways we're the investment management club for Darden. So there's lots of professional clubs here, but our focus is the investment management world. So we help first year students with training and career treks and recruiting. We bring lots of speakers to campus and do sort of lunch and learns. We put on our own stock pitch competition that coincides with the University of Virginia's investing conference every fall. We work with other MBA programs that also do stock pitch competitions, and we send teams to compete. So lots of different ways that Darden Capital Management is involved throughout the Darden world. There's a room in the library where there's about 10 Bloomberg terminals. So it's called the Capital Markets Room, and that's usually where we would meet. Now that we're virtual, that's not the case anymore. But basically the funds of three different students will meet once a week to discuss investment ideas, do pitches, and talk about the markets. So it's been a really great part of my Darden experience, and I'm very happy to be in a leadership position where I can help figure out how DCM can give back to future generations of Darden students.
So just a practical question, how does one get involved in the class? Do you have to be chosen to participate in the class? Can anybody sign up? I mean, how does it work from a mechanical standpoint?
Yes, great question. So in your first year, while you're in core, you can be a part of the club by, again, going to speakers, being a part of the trainings. We do FactSet trainings and DCF trainings. So different ways to get involved throughout your first year. And then in the February of your first year, the application for the class comes out, and that application involves doing a stock pitch, but sort of a less intense stock pitch, and an interview with Pedro, our faculty advisor. And then 24 students are chosen. So it's, you know, apply into the class and then you're chosen. And then the leadership positions, so the one that I'm in, and there's a few other positions on the executive board. And then there are senior portfolio managers that basically have the end all, or the have the end decision makers for each of the funds. Those positions are all chosen by the faculty members, the Mayo Center advisors, and which is the Mayo Center is the Mayo Center for Asset Management, which we can talk about if you'd like, and then all the second year students. So DCM is very much something that you apply into, and then different constituents choose the people that are going to be in those leadership positions. So it's a little bit different than a normal Darden club. For the most part, the rest of the clubs at Darden, you're elected by your classmates. So in the spring of your first year, that's how those leadership positions come about. But as I'm sure you've spoken about on the podcast, Darden is a very student-run place. So it's no secret that these leadership positions are very much a thing here.
Yeah, over 50 student organizations, many ways to be involved, for sure. So you are the CEO of yes. Darden Capital Management. What does it mean to be the CEO? What does that look like?
Yes. So structurally, there's, as I said, five different funds. So we have a value-oriented fund, a long-short fund, a small-cap fund, a global fund, and then an ESG or impact investing fund. And each fund has about $4 million currently in the AUM. So those five funds are then sort of overseen by the executive board, which is the CEO, the chief investment officer, the director of research, and the CFO. So as the CEO, my job is basically to oversee the entire program in terms of how everything is run relating to all the different constituents at Darden, working with the faculty advisor, the Mayo Center, and sort of the person that comes up with a lot of the goals and strategic orientation for what DCM is going to be for that year that we're in charge. So we present to the Board of Trustees, Darden's Board of Trustees, twice a year, once in the fall, once in the spring, to update them on what's going on in the funds. So I'm the one that does a lot of that presentation. I'm in charge of a lot of the communication with the rest of the school. So we write a weekly newsletter. I am in contact with other heads of these funds at all the other MBA programs. So we sort of are sharing ideas about how to make these programs better. So I guess in terms of what do? I'm sort of the brains behind the strategic, again, orientation of what do we want DCM to be. And I'm very aware of how lucky I am to be surrounded by such smart, talented peers. So I hope that the rest of the team feels like it's a very collaborative environment. We have lots of meetings where we're discussing trainings and first-year liaisons and alumni recruiting efforts and new tools and resources we want to implement. And I think because I come from an investment management background, it was and something that I cared a lot about being a part of DCM, it was in some ways kind of second nature for me to want to be involved and then see ways to improve the program. So for example, we have our, you know, trading platform through one of the larger banks, and that platform wasn't necessarily integrated with our performance reporting system. So this spring, I led a very intense effort to integrate those systems so that we could have a dashboard on all of our remote laptops to view all the funds and run analytics and performance reporting so we could have conversations about our investments and holdings sort of in real time. In the past, it wasn't that easy. So that was one of the main things coming from Cambridge Associates and from my background. It was easy for me to come in and say, you know, we can't have the same, you know, quality conversations about the funds if we can't necessarily see what's happening in the funds on a daily basis. So that was something that I was happy that we did execute. And now we have FactSet integrated with our systems, and we can, you know, run attribution and all these other analytics that we can then look at to figure out how well we're doing. So that's just an example of a goal that I had when I was a first year, looking at some of the meetings and said, maybe I can help with that. So I know that was a long-winded answer, apologies, but that's, as you can tell, there's quite a lot going on. And I think one thing that I'm sure you were going to ask, but as I mentioned, Darden's a very student-run place. So when I transitioned into this role, the CEO from last year basically said to me, you know, this is, you know, we did what we did this year. And if you have ways that you want to change or improve things, we have a investment policy statement. So there are guidelines about what we can and can't invest in. But in terms of how we run the club and the program, it's very much on the students each year to decide how they want to go about doing things. And because it is such a sort of open-ended, you know, run this the way that you want, it's I guess a double-edged sword, because I feel like I'm constantly working on it and looking for ways to make things better. But then at the same time, there's been a great legacy of classes that have come before us that have done a great job, and we're trying to keep a lot of those traditions alive as well.
Should also note the context around your CEO role. You are the first female CEO of Darden Capital Management, which I read that, you know, it's been some coverage of it, and rightfully so. And I was like, is that right? And then you were talking about it before the podcast. It is right. It's in about time. And you'd mentioned, though, that women have been involved yes. in a number of roles, just maybe not the CEO role. Talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's important context.
Definitely. Yeah, so there have been quite a few women over the years that have been involved in roles like the chief investment officer, director of research, CFO role, and then definitely the senior portfolio managers have been women. And for sure, there have been portfolio managers throughout the years. I think, so right now, 50% of our class is women, which we're very proud of. I think it's one of the higher ends of number of women that have been involved in DCM. So for sure, women have been involved over the years. I think the CEO position and role was created, I think, in the early 2000s when the structure of DCM changed as the money grew and as more funds, so like different subsidiaries and the five different funds came about. So because there wasn't just one, you know, sum of money that they were investing, there sort of needed to be this structure that a lot of, you know, real investment management companies firms have, where there are people managing the money and then there are people managing the program or the firm. So this is, I guess I'm the first female to be, as you said, in the CEO role, even though women have been involved in the past. I think what's different now is, I guess all decisions kind of end with me and I'm the face of the program. And I think that there's, in some ways, I didn't really even think about it when I was excited about the role and applied for it. I just thought of it as something that I was excited about and wanted to be involved in the program and wanted to do my best to make it the best that it could be. But I think what I'm seeing now, especially with working with the first year classes, and one of my goals was to try and help other women consider careers in financial services. So I think there's quite a few roles within the industry, whether it's investor relations or strategy or risk management that people don't even really know about. And I think having me in this role is helping other women see that it's possible to be in these leadership positions, even though investment management and finances has been dominated by men in the past. But I'm very proud and excited to be leading DCM. And I guess my gender is just a part of the way that I'm managing things, but I'm not really thinking about it. I'm very happy about it. And it's actually been great to connect with other women that have been involved in DCM over the years. And a lot of people have been reaching out. I was on the phone with a alum this morning who works at a very well-known long-only shop that I am a very big fan of. So that was a fun experience, but we were discussing diversity in the workplace, and it's just, This coverage has led to a lot of really interesting conversations, and I'm hoping to help women have those conversations and maybe find jobs and in roles that they would love, but they just didn't necessarily know about. So again, long-winded answer. I apologize.
No, it's all right. We always take exposition here on the podcast. A long answer is better than a short answer, I can tell you. A couple more questions about DCM. I've been wondering, as you were talking about, you got these five funds, you know, they all kind of have a different focus. What's it like to try to manage these funds in the midst of, you know, a pandemic and with a lot of uncertainty? I think there's been this, you know, conversation over the past 6-7 months, maybe longer, that the stock market is not really reflecting the broader economy, mm-hmm. and that the stock market is not the economy. But ultimately, we still got a ways to go, it looks like, mm-hmm. with the pandemic. And so ultimately, how are you thinking about things, and what has it been like to try to manage things in the midst of all of this uncertainty?
It's been a major focus for sure. I think it was, so we transitioned the portfolios in March of this year, and our track record began April 1st, which was right in the peak of the downturn, which is a very interesting time to be inheriting names. So I think in general, the way that we are thinking about, I guess, strategy in general is an endowment is managed into perpetuity. So the purpose of the endowment is to be around forever, and we need to take a long-term perspective when it comes to managing this money. So I think short-term, you know, we inherited names like Delta and a lot of other consumer discretionary stocks, a lot of healthcare names. And there was definitely conversations around, okay, these names probably won't come back to their, you know, pre-COVID valuation levels and, you know, for a couple of years maybe. So do we hold on to them? Do we buy more because they're down? And that conversation was really interesting, especially, again, since we weren't necessarily the ones pitching them in the first place. So I think high level, our perspective has been, let's try and think about, you know, 3 to 5 year time horizon for these investments, and just create a way so that there's an institutional knowledge around why we bought a name or why we sold a name. So another initiative of mine has been to create investment chronologies and documentation for rebalancing and movement, so that classes that come after us can have records of, okay, you know, we trimmed this name, or we added to this name, or we sold out of this name, and it's not sort of them guessing, oh, maybe it was because of COVID, but there was, you know, real documentation for it. So yes, it's been very challenging to manage during this market volatility, but at the same time, I think it's been very fun. We have names that are up over 200% this year, and we have names that are very much not up 200% over the year. But I think what's fun is that because each fund has such a different, I guess, investment thesis, whether it's ESG or value, there are names that are held across the funds or in different funds for different reasons. So the PMs, we have lots of conversations cross funds to talk about, you know, oh, we're thinking about it because of this, or we think, you know, it's going to bounce back because of these reasons in COVID times. So it's been difficult. I think our performance has actually been great. I'm very proud of that. I think part of it is inheriting names that have done well, and part of it is that these are very concentrated portfolios. So these portfolios have a maximum of 30 or 40 stocks total, and some of the portfolios, given just risk tolerance and the PM's nature towards, or ideas towards COVID, some of them only have 18 names. So very concentrated portfolios that when you have a name that's doing well, it and it's sized at, you know, 8%, it does well over that time period. So again, long-winded answer, but it's been interesting. I think we've been using resources and market update decks from different places to kind of think about, okay, what are the themes that we can capitalize on here? Is it tech? Is it, you know, things like Zoom or PayPal or just sort of the internet of things? Like, how can we position the portfolios to do well during, you know, COVID times, but at the same time realize that in a year, the class after us will inherit the portfolios and they need to make decisions about those names as well. So I guess more generally it's do these names still, do the thesis about why we're holding X stock, does that thesis still hold? And if it does, and the stock is down 20%, let's buy more, because over the long term, it should come back. And if that thesis plays out, it'll be a great bet. But again, it's a student run organization, and we're learning from each other. And, I think it's been a great educational process. Also for context, so 50% of the members are women, and then most of the members are going into investment banking after Darden. There are probably, I'd say half are going into banking and then half are going into some sort of consulting role. And then there's sort of a subset of that, like myself, that are going into wealth management or private banking, other things. So definitely a diversity of thought in terms of what they were doing this summer and how they were thinking about things. So conversations are always very interesting.
So it certainly seems like you came to your role with a lot of things on your mind, things that you wanted to accomplish. So you'd already mentioned operationally this sort of syncing your trading platform to the reporting platform, creating some documentation around why you made certain decisions. Anything else that's, you know, on your list of things you hope to accomplish in the remaining time that you're CEO, or goals that you have, or just things that you're looking forward to?
Yes. One of my main, I guess, goals is also to create a platform or institutionalize how we can utilize the DCM alumni network for recruiting and for just generally helping students learn more about investment management. In my mind, the subset of people that have done DCM over the years are a really important subset network that we can tap into and connect with. And there are so many students that would be interested in doing that, but that doesn't live anywhere necessarily. So over the years, you know, names have been passed down and there have been files of people to contact, but my goal is to create a very formal, institutionalized, whether it's a LinkedIn group or there's platforms that I created. I'm the founder of Bucknell Women in Finance Alumni Network. So I created an online platform for women Bucknell alums to connect with each other. And I think a similar idea would be nice to have here. So I'm building out I'm working to build out a way for all DCM alums to be able to contact each other. And then within that, I think it'd be really interesting to try a mentorship program. So maybe in the coming years, we can have alums that are more willing to, I mean, it feels like all Darden alums are willing to speak to current students, but a subset of people that are, you know, year after year willing to connect with people to pair them with first years interested in recruiting in the industry and help them kind of from day one think about their process. And again, I think all those opportunities are there and people would say yes. It's just a question of executing on that and having, again, a physical platform or place where this lives. So that's something that is in the works, and we just created some first year liaison roles so that we can have first years involved in helping with that. And I'm excited to see where that goes, because I think it will open up a lot of doors and opportunities for first years to, and second years to connect with other alums and to bring alums back to sort of the Darden universe. The alumni engagement and recruiting piece is something that I care a lot about, especially because I think the investment management industry is a great place to be and to work. And it's really about educating those, again, about the roles in the industry. And usually those places don't recruit on ground. So it's more on groups like DCM or on the individual to reach out and find those roles, create those roles for themselves. But if we can make it easier for people that come into Darden, you know, curious about that industry, and they're not necessarily forced from day one to go into a more structured recruiting process, then I just think over the long term, it would be nice to have more Darden alums in the industry. So that's one of my main goals. There's lots of other sort of smaller projects that I'm excited about, but the team is great and the Career Development Center is great. The Mayo Center is great. Everyone is incredibly supportive of what we're trying to do. And again, my goal is really to just leave DCM in a place that's better than where I found it, even though it was in great shape when I came into the role. And I'm excited for, again, future Darden students and prospective students to be a part of it.
And we're recording this in advance of this year's investing mm-hmm. conference. Yep. Will you be involved in that?
Yes. So University of Virginia puts on the investing conference, and there are some very interesting speakers, keynote speakers this year, which I'm very excited about. And then Darden, so it's called DIVIC, but Darden Investing Challenge at Darden also happens around the same time. So we have our stock pitch competition that Friday, and we already have over 20 teams signed up from different MBA programs across the country. So we're very much excited to host them virtually and do those competitions. So I will be involved in coordinating that, but there are other people on the team are leading that effort. We also, the way that the competition works is it's a stock pitch competition, but the judges are all Darden alums. So we've been bringing alums back, and there are quite a few alums year after year that do participate. And then while they're judges, we create a resume book and send the resume book of first years and second years to the judges to, you know, for recruiting efforts. And then we usually set up office hours for students to meet with those alums that are involved. So it's kind of a multi-pronged effort to get everyone exposure to stock pitching and interact with other schools. But at the same time, it's a recruiting opportunity and a way to interact with alums. So that's on October 30th. I believe some of it will be webcasted, but that's on the University of Virginia side. And there will be probably some recordings of some of the competition side from our side. So we have an internal newsletter that goes out to Darden students. And then there's a quarterly letter called The Advisor that we write that goes out to all the alums. So we'll definitely be reporting on that in The Advisor. And if anybody is interested in learning more about DCM or wants to connect and chat about investment management or recruiting or Darden, I'm more than willing to speak with prospective students. I feel like it's, again, people did it for me and I'm very happy to do it for others. So happy to connect.
Well, Rachel, thank you so much for your time today. It's great speaking with you. I learned a ton. I'm sure I can say the same for our listeners. Good luck with Darden Capital Management and good luck with everything you're hoping to accomplish this year and stay safe. And thank you again for taking time for the podcast.
Of course. Thank you. You too. Look forward to speaking with you soon.
And that was my interview with Rachel Gibson, a second year student in our full-time MBA class of 2021. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. We can be reached at Darden, that's D-A-R-D-E-N, at virginia.edu. And until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.